What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer. We're three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for four seasons now, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly. And this is our second season with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, it's Tuesday, and you know what that means? It means we're going to be getting into our What Went Right and What Went Wrong segments of the show. So a bunch to get into and what went wrong. But I mean, obviously, it pretty much all focuses on the turnovers from this game, because that's the big thing, what went wrong over and over and over again. So we're going to get into that and end things with a silver lining, as we always do with our What Went Right segment. And there's a few things and a few guys. I mean, Mike Williams played well. The defense played well for much of this game. So there are some things to talk about there as well. But we're going to start with a couple of strange things that happened over the weekend. First, Desmond King basically being suspended for this game, or at least ruled out very late for it. And just that happening for the second time in 2 weeks after Roger Teamer and Denzel Perryman got sent home from Jacksonville for missing a meeting, allegedly. So we're going to get into that weird situation happening 2 weeks in a row, and the weird situation of Philip Rivers actually giving some sound at a press conference that was newsworthy, talking about his future, which we have never really heard him talk about so far this season. So let's go ahead and get into it. This is your Locked On Chargers lead story. I'm Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer. The news of the day has to do with Desmond King and Philip Rivers. Desmond King was a late scratch for the Chargers game against the Vikings on Sunday. He was ruled out on Saturday, also his birthday, for a non-injury related issue. This is the second time that's happened in 2 weeks, as Roger Teamer and Denzel Perryman were sent home last week from Jacksonville right before the game and were also late scratches for non-injury reasons. David, this is the second time in as many weeks that we've seen this. It's definitely an alarming sign for the Chargers, because in the 3 years of Anthony Lynn's tenure, we had not seen it, and now it's three players in 2 weeks. So you hate to speculate too much, because the Chargers have been super airtight with all of this news. I mean, the most we got out of the Denzel Perryman, Roger Teamer situation was that they missed a meeting, and that barely got out. And there was only really one source that was saying it, and that was ESPN's Eric Williams. This one has as much mystery shrouded around it as well, because we haven't heard a single thing. It's hard to believe he would be a healthy scratch for a team that needs as much help as they can get. And it also seems a little odd that it would happen on his birthday, leading you to believe, with what we heard last week, that maybe, you know, he missed a meeting on Saturday after a late night celebrating his birthday. But we just don't know. But the one thing we do know is that it is concerning for a 5-9 football team to have guys being sent home from away games and also missing home games against really good football teams. That can't be a good sign for the Chargers coaching staff.
No, I mean, it's not a good sign, Daniel. I mean, you don't want to speculate, but after a underwhelming season up to this point, where the Chargers missed out on the playoffs and underperformed, you can't help but wonder if Anthony Lynn has started to lose the locker room a little bit. You got two guys in Denzel Perryman, who has been on the team for many years, and Roger Teamer, a rookie, who are getting disciplined. And then the next week you have your all-pro get disciplined for whatever reason. We don't know at this point. But that's 2 weeks in a row at this point in the season where the Chargers' record is at. It's starting to look like guys are not caring or not respecting their leadership. You hate to speculate on that, but I mean, that's exactly what it looks like right now, Daniel, and that is not a good look. I mean, you don't know, because like you said, the Chargers like to keep things airtight, but the writing is on the wall.
Well, the one thing we know, it can't possibly be a good thing if Desmond King is being forced to miss a game. Just doesn't make sense for any other reason besides a punitive measure. I mean, that's the only thing we could realistically take away from this, overcorrecting what he may think is a locker room getting away from him by punishing players and having them miss games, which is something we've never seen in his tenure. So not a good sign for Anthony Lynn's football team right now that players are missing games due to disciplinary reasons in a season that's lost. But the other news of the day is revolving around Philip Rivers, who made waves in his post-game press conference acknowledging that these might be his last two games, which is really big news, because it's something that Philip Rivers has not addressed all season long. Yet, after a huge loss to the Vikings on Sunday where they get blown out, his comments were very telling. The quote from Rivers after the game when asked about if these could possibly be his last two games were, "It could be. I don't necessarily expect that it is, or I don't necessarily think it's a crazy thought that it will be. I think you just don't know." So, David, after not hearing anything from Philip Rivers, and now you hear him saying that it could be his last two games and that the decision is not really in his hands and it's going to have to do with the organization as well, but he did say that he does, as of now, want to be back. It just might be out of his hands, which is something very different from what we've heard from him all season long.
Yeah, I mean, Philip Rivers is usually very professional when he's at the booth. He doesn't really give a lot. He always gives really good answers, and the media always loves talking to Philip, but Philip is always usually very tactful with the words that he does use. And in this situation, it kind of just seemed like he just answered the question in his truest self. I mean, he really said, hey, you know, he acknowledged his shortcomings and the type of year that he had and the type of the year the Chargers have had as a result. And he said, hey, I don't know what's going to happen, which, I mean, he doesn't. Obviously, it is not ultimately his decision whether he comes back. It's the decision of the organization and if they want to bring Philip back. So, I mean, it's very rare that you get these type of comments out of anybody, and let alone a character the stature of Philip Rivers. So, I mean, very interesting, very kind of chilling words from Philip as he talks about a very uncertain future.
An absolutely uncertain future, and there's many fans who want him back. There's many fans who want him gone, but this decision has not been made yet, seemingly by the front office or this Chargers team. It seems like it's still up in the air. We have no idea where it's going to go from there, but the self-awareness to have Philip Rivers say this about his own career and to be able to kind of look at his struggles and say that it might be it for him are just something we have never really seen. But one thing's for certain, everything after this season could change drastically if number 17 decides to either hang it up or that he's not coming back to the Chargers. But we do have two more segments to get into. Next, we will start with John Kegley, our resident expert on all things that went wrong in the Chargers game against the Vikings, before finishing things up at the end of the show with what went right coming up right after this. All right, guys. Well, we're getting into two segments that we always do every single week, getting into what went right and what went wrong from the Chargers' previous game. And as a lot of the games have gone this season, we have another one where the what went wrong portion of the show is going to be absolutely loaded, and the what went right portion is going to be hard to come by, even though there were some good performances that we have something to talk about. But as we always do, we start with what went wrong. And as we always start what went wrong, we start with John Kegley, who is our resident expert in all things wrong. John, you were at the game on Sunday. You saw up close and personal that Chargers meltdown. So what do you want to start with for what went wrong this week?
The obvious, the turnovers. It was ridiculous. It wasn't one or two or like one turnover at the last second that ruined the whole game, like Rivers throwing an interception on a game tying drive. It was all game long, and I can't even make up a reason for it. How does Melvin Gordon fumble twice? Austin Eckler fumbled, and Keenan Allen had to bat it out of bounds. Eckler fumbled on a play that doesn't count. And then Hunter Henry fumbled, but it shouldn't have even counted as a fumble. Rivers with his interceptions. Like, how does this all come together? You can't even blame it on one person because everyone was fumbling or turning over the ball. They had their share. It makes no sense. Was it a lack of focus? Are they giving up on Anthony Lynn? Is this who they are? I mean, Melvin Gordon has had some fumble issues in the past. So has Eckler. Rivers has had interception issues this year. What is the issue here? This is unacceptable.
100%. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, the most turnovers that they've had since 1998. I mean, 20 plus years. And this is one of those games where I feel like ever since Philip Rivers said that, you know, you can have a couple of turnovers and win, they've just absolutely turned the ball over left and right, which is a little bit ironic there. And this is the game where all of the Philip Rivers haters came back out to play. And some of the Philip Rivers supporters were still out there trying to defend him. And I mean, that always brings out the best of Chargers Twitter, I say sarcastically. But I mean, another game where it's hard to have a lot of confidence in Philip Rivers when you see a 3-interception game. And that's one thing that bothered me about this game, Dave, and I would put as what went wrong, because it's not just having Philip Rivers and starters out on the field when you're down 39-10 in a season at this point that really does not matter. But also putting Melvin Gordon back in the game. I mean, you bench him, you take his helmet away, you sit him down for a quarter after those two fumbles. I mean, it seemed like after Hunter Henry fumbled, Anthony Lynn was just kind of like, well, I guess everybody's fumbling, so we might as well put Melvin Gordon back on the field. But if you're talking about holding your players accountable, I mean, letting Phillip Rivers go out there and continue to keep turning the ball over is one thing. I mean, it's your franchise quarterback, a guy who spent, you know, 17 years with the organization, and you could kind of make arguments for that. But to bench a guy and then to bring him back into the game when the game's out of reach, instead of using maybe a guy like Justin Jackson, who's just not getting any carries right now at the end of the bench, why would you do that? I mean, what does that message send? I mean, putting him back in there instead of giving young guys who will actually be with the team next season some chances to show something. Instead, you're putting Melvin Gordon back in, who's an obvious not, who's obviously not part of this team's future.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, you fumble once, okay, I'm going to sit you for a quarter after that. You fumble twice, I'm pretty much going to take your pads away from you and give you a ball cap and let you watch the rest of this one, because obviously, you know, there's something going on where we don't want that to continue. And yeah, I mean, I don't understand why you don't give Justin Jackson more touches. I mean, we've seen throughout this season that when he gets the ball in his hands, he's electric and he can make plays, and his elusiveness always helps get him extra yards. I don't understand why he wasn't in the game earlier than he was. For me, for what went wrong, I'm going to go with, and I hate to do this to the defense because they overall they played fairly well, but they had zero sacks in this game. And it was the fourth time this season that they did not have any sacks. For having a couple of guys like Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, even Uchenna Nwosu, who can get after the quarterback, for you to get no pressure at all, I mean, zero. I mean, you can't expect to win football games. I mean, I'm sorry. I hate to do it to them, but you got to get after the quarterback, especially kind of a stationary one like Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and when you have zero sacks as a team, and even no matter who the players are, I mean, even if you didn't have Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram, that would be an issue. But for the fourth time this season to have zero sacks with those two guys out there is pretty inexcusable. I mean, the Vikings did run the football a decent amount, and they did get some pressure leading to some stops on third down, which helps. But to not be able to bring him down, to not be able to set them behind the chains by getting Kirk Cousins down for a sack, definitely hurt the Chargers in this game. And the Vikings have a pretty good pass protecting offensive line, but you needed it in this game and they just did not get it done. And that's the one of the most infuriating parts about this Chargers defense is you've added so much on that defensive line, or you have so much talent. You added a first round pick there who still, I mean, is not being able to get any pressure, and you can't get any sacks against Kirk Cousins. That's embarrassing. The Chargers should be embarrassed for that. I also thought there was a little bit of a lack of creativity defensively. I mean, to send Derwin James on a blitz or a play like that, that you can actually try to manufacture some pressure. I mean, the team didn't have Derwin James in the secondary, actually held up pretty well, but to just keep throwing out the same thing and not trying to find a new way to get pressure when the four aren't getting there, I think Gus Bradley definitely has to answer to. But another thing, I mean, for me, obviously, when you're talking about the turnovers, that was what most of this game was. It wasn't really a ton of things that went wrong, but the same wrong thing that kept happening over and over and over again. But to me, I mean, I talked about it yesterday, but for me, what went wrong is just the Chargers letting the game get away by not finishing the first half and not being able to make adjustments and come back and get back into the game in the second half. And that goes on the coaching, John. I mean, the players have to be out there to fumble, and the coaches say that they're there to promote ball security. There's a day every week where they focus on it. But it's hard to think that those words are getting through to this team, and it's hard to think that this team is well coached when they can't make adjustments at halftime. Obviously, Melvin Gordon fumbles, but the next drive you go three and out, and you can't finish off games in the first half. And that's been the season, is just not being able to finish, not just the games where you've ended some in interceptions, but they can't even finish halves. And I think that is something that, of course, went wrong again in this game.
And let's not forget to mention that we have players getting disciplinary suspensions, basically, from
2 weeks in a row.
So there's something definitely going wrong with this coaching. Could the players be giving up on him? Is the coach losing control of the locker room? Whatever it could be, you know, there's something going on here with these coaches. Are they just here to collect a paycheck? Are they stubborn that they think that their way is going to work? Because you're right, we don't see adjustments, really. We've seen maybe two games where they actually had adjustments. But even in those games, they actually went back to what they wanted to do, and that's when we started messing up again. I don't get what it is with these coaches. You're a coach. You're here to win a football game. You study the game. You're supposed to know what's wrong and fix it. For my time playing, coaching, and being in locker rooms to cover sports and stuff, I've always seen a coach make some kind of an adjustment to what's going on. He'll say, okay, they're trying to do this in here, so now we're going to do this. And it's like, where's the Chargers going to do that? Where's the Chargers is, oh, hey, they're blitzing us here, so let's throw a pass here. and make them stop blitzing us. No, you don't see that. It's got to be something with these coaches that is probably an ego thing, if I had to take a guess.
Well, and the coaches invite a lot of criticism when the games keep going down like this. I mean, at some point, coaching has to be something that's helping this team. And right now, I just don't think it is. I mean, and talking about coaching, Gus Bradley, again, has a third and long play. It's not the same as the Broncos play, but on third and 14, somehow you let their best receiver, Stephon Diggs, obviously Thielen's coming back from an injury, but Stephon Diggs was the more active one in this game, get way behind your defense. Again, on third and 14, it looked like Adrian Phillips, he might have had a shallower coverage zone because he definitely bit on a shallower route. Maybe it was Rayshon Jenkins up top alone, but to see him that wide open, I mean, is absolutely killer, and you hate to see that. And Gus Bradley, that's just inexcusable to let somebody be that wide open, no matter what the score of the game is. But coaching, I mean, calling timeouts at the end of the game instead of letting your letting the game be over, putting your starters back in there when it's 39-10, that decision to not take the points at that point when it's 4th and 14, when how is that good coaching when Trent Scott's coming into the fourth quarter and getting a false start right away? That's like your manager in baseball in the bottom of the 7th goes up to you in between innings and says, hey, you're going to bunt right here. And then Trent Scott goes up there and just strikes out anyways. I mean, it's absolutely crazy to think that that happened. That was a great point by you, John. But just the coaching has to take a lot of the blame in this game. But Phillip Rivers, I mean, it just sucks because he really could have had a good game in this one if he had just made a couple of different decisions. If he hadn't been out there in the fourth quarter, his day would have automatically looked better. But David, for the future of this team, to see Phillip Rivers go into a game after last week, he absolutely shreds the Jaguars and has that fire and passion, to see him kind of just lobbing balls up there, getting picked off easily and fumbling, leading to a score for the other team because he, you know, is so cement-footed sometimes. I mean, that's a huge what went wrong in this game, because you had some positive thoughts on Rivers after last week and thought, you know, maybe he does still have what it takes. And now after this one, all the questions arise again.
Yeah, I mean, how could they not? I mean, not only the 3 interceptions, but the lost fumble. I mean, he goes over 300 passing yards, which, I mean, seems like he does that every game. But it just goes back to the elementary level. You throw the ball and it lands in the other team's hands, more times than not, you're going to lose football games. I hate to see this because Phillip Rivers has been one of my favorite players throughout, you know, my fandom as a Charger fan, which, you know, spans over 20 years now. It sucks because, you know, you want to see him do well and you hate to watch one of your favorite players crumble before your eyes, but he kind of foreshadowed this a little bit. It might be his last couple of games wearing a Chargers uniform.
Yeah, I mean, at least he's saying something about it, which is more than what we've heard from him in the past, where it's just, I don't hear the criticism, I don't let that get to me, all of these things. Now it's like, well, actually, I don't know what's going to happen, which really sucks. And I know there's so much blame to go around this game. I'm not going to say Phillip Rivers is the reason they lost this game. But if you were looking for positive signs going forward for Phillip Rivers to have, you know, his third pretty good game in a row, which was right there in his grasp, but got away with him, of course, with careless plays, which has been the story of his season. And yes, he does seem like he goes over 300 yards every game. I mean, he went into this game third in the NFL in passing yards, but also third in interceptions. So to me, that, I mean, the Chargers are absolutely asking a little bit too much from him at this point, but the early in-game interceptions that are getting them in these holes and the turnovers in the first half that leads to the Chargers needing to make furious comebacks, which just didn't end up happening in this game, are absolutely brutal. They kill the game, and it's hard to think that the Chargers don't need to explore other options like we've talked about. I mean, all season long, you have to explore other options, but to think that you're going to maybe potentially get one more season out of him if you can get an offensive line is looking a little bit more doubtful after this game against the Vikings. But we do want to end the show with a silver lining, so it's time to get into our What Went Right segment of the show. We'll see if we can muster anything up coming up right after this. All right, guys, well, it's time to get into our What Went Right segment of the show. And after you lose 39-10 and get shellacked like the Chargers did, there's really not too much to talk about. the Chargers scored 10 points in this game and zero in the second half. So there were, but there were some good performances that we should highlight. And for me, when I start with what went right, I really want to emphasize what this defense did to not let this game be 59-10, because this defense got put with their backs against the wall so many times in this game. I mean, there's blocked punts to set the Vikings offense up with good field position. There was fumbles the inside of the red zone two times that set them up for really easy scores in plays like that. But the Chargers defense kept getting through and kept holding strong and forcing the Vikings to make field goals, which kept the Chargers, I mean, at 25-10 going into the fourth quarter, John. So I do want to start, even in a tough game for the Chargers as a whole, by highlighting the fact that this defense did come to this game ready to play. They performed extremely well against Dalvin Cook, who has absolutely diced up so many teams in the NFL. And I just want to, even when the final stat line doesn't necessarily show a good performance by the Chargers defense, highlight the fact that this was not on them and they actually played very well, especially through the first three quarters.
They played very well, and they were hitting. The first drive, yeah, was kind of bad, but, I mean, that's usually the case on first drives most of the time. Unless you're the Chargers, then you just never score on the first drive. But
right.
Most defenses tend to be a little bit hesitant on the first drive, and then they pick it up as the game goes, which is what was happening with us. But you're right. It wasn't on them. The offense put them in bad situations. Giving the Vikings the ball on your own side of the field constantly and having to defend a short field and allowing just a couple of field goals most of the time, that's a good job by your defense. When they first came out, they were hitting. They were throwing hits, and I mean, they were throwing hits. I loved it. They were ready to play. They wanted to play. I haven't seen that kind of fire in a while. Even Denzel Perryman came in and just slammed Dalvin Cook on the floor and said, "Hey, you know what? Screw you. I own this." And he went over, celebrated. He was proud of that hit, and it took Cook out of the game. That's a football hit. That's a defense that wants to play. The offense was the exact opposite, of course. You know, like you can just see the difference. Just look at the offense comes on the field. They're just going through the motions. Look at the defense. The defense wanted to play. You saw the energy and the hype. And I think Derwin James has a lot to do with that being the leader on that defense. So I got to give them a what went right absolutely in this game. You could say they had no sacks or whatever, but everything else was pretty good.
Well, we said in this game that the Chargers, if they'd played the bend but don't break defense, which is hard to even say they bent a lot in the first three quarters because they were just getting set up in such precarious situations that really it was just don't break for the Chargers defense, and they didn't. I mean, they kept the Chargers in this game, and it was, like we said, 25-10 going into the fourth quarter. They did plenty, especially with what the Chargers offense did for them, which was absolutely nothing. I really just think that this game offensively is what absolutely killed the Chargers, and the defense ended up looking bad at the end of it because they were so deflated by the Chargers offense continuing to just absolutely let them down time and time again, which is just so hard to watch. And I honestly felt bad for that Chargers defense. But David, there were some big games offensively, and the one I thought of to talk about for sure has to be Mike Williams. I know at the end of it, it goes four catches for 77 yards and a touchdown on 71. Nine targets. Four catches for 71 yards and a touchdown on nine targets. So the 4 for 9, that's not good. I mean, you definitely want to see him come down with more targets than that. But I mean, a couple of those times he had no shot, like the fourth down play or the interception where Anthony Harris undercuts it and intercepts it. I mean, he didn't have a shot at those ones. But just watching Mike Williams battle through injuries and become the elite receiver they thought he would be when they took him in the top 10 of the draft, we've really seen it over the last few weeks. He's one of the best big play receivers in the entire NFL. I mean, he averages the most yards per reception in the NFL, and it started again, and he was the only reason this Chargers offense got going in the first half. And as soon as that stopped working, the Chargers offense completely stopped working. But I do want to highlight Mike Williams turning into something that we could potentially see being a number one wide receiver in the NFL.
Without question. And it was really great to see him get another touchdown to add to his two that he has on the season now. I mean, you know, back-to-back games with a touchdown. We did say that they would come in bunches, and hopefully he can finish out the year with a couple more to add to his list so his season stats look a little bit better. But yeah, Mike Williams, just another phenomenal game. I mean, like I said before, when the Chargers need a big play, they're looking at 81, and more times than not, he provides that big play. So gotta love what Mike Williams was able to do and has been able to do this entire season. But another guy I want to highlight is, you know, Keenan Allen. I mean, mean, Keenan Allen goes over 1,000 yards receiving for the third straight year, goes 9 catches for 99 yards in this one, just one away from a 100-yard receiving game. But, you know, hey, keeping the chains moving, Slayer was doing that all game long, first down after first down after first down. So gotta highlight those two. And, I mean, hey, guys, I mean, by the end of this year, the Chargers can absolutely conceivably have 3 guys that go over 1,000 yards receiving. Mike Williams is close, Austin Eckler is close, and Keenan is already there.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm honestly, it's funny to think that Keenan Allen with his 10 targets didn't get targeted enough in this game. I mean, it seemed like he had that one-on-one matchup whenever he wanted it, and it was pretty much always good for a first down, which is why the Chargers converted 54% of their third downs in this game, which is actually ridiculously good. I mean, that's a very good number to convert on third downs. You wouldn't know it by the score of the game, but somehow that was a strength. It was just everything else that went right down the toilet. But the one last thing I will say that comes from this game, and I know some people want to hear it and some people don't want to hear it, but something that went right in this game is the Chargers moving up to the 9th spot in the draft. So the Chargers helped their draft position in this game. It is a nice thing. I mean, you'd like to see them, you know, maybe at least play well and lose, and or even though we've seen that, I mean, a bunch of times already. They did help their draft position in this game, and with the season over and the playoffs out of reach, that is something that has to be considered a positive. I mean, you want it to not be embarrassed, but the Chargers are 9th now. They're right in the middle of a bunch of 5-9 football teams, so things can definitely change. I mean, they're going up against a team next week in the Raiders, and that game's going to mean a lot as far as draft position. But John, I know that you're not down with tanking for the season as much as I am, but that is a positive that comes from this. I mean, the Chargers gain nothing as far as their draft position if they beat the Vikings in this game, and now As of now, the Chargers have a top 10 pick, and they still have to play the Chiefs and the Raiders, who they've already lost to once already this season. So at least if there's one thing you can take away from it, is the Chargers are helping their draft position.
That means absolutely nothing. All I got to say is Ryan Leaf, top 3 pick, absolutely crap. And then you can look at Lamar Jackson, who was at the end of the draft and is playing great. It don't matter.
At the end of the first round, at least.
Two different type of positions, and one's doing good, one's doing bad. It's not where you draft, it's who you draft. And I don't care where we draft, it's what are we going to draft with that pick. If we got a top 5 pick and selected a Trey Pipkins, then we lost all those games for nothing, and we had to sit there and watch the Chargers lose for nothing. I will not ever be on the tanking side, and I will not call it a positive in this game. We need wins. We need to win. We could die tomorrow and have the last game we saw be a loss. No thanks.
Yeah, and I mean, I knew that was going to be your answer. To be fair, I mean, I knew where you stood on the matter, but I disagree as far as, yes, you have to pick the right player there, but the higher your draft pick is, the more options you have available to you. I mean, you don't get Joey Bosa unless you end up with such a bad record that year. I mean, you could have had Patrick Mahomes, because to go along with your point, you could have picked Patrick Mahomes instead of Mike Williams, and that would have been, you know, something you had a chance to do, and instead you take Mike Williams, who's looking good after this week. But overall, I mean, you'd rather have Patrick Mahomes, of course, but at least this gives you the most options. There's a lot of quarterback needy teams that are in the NFL, especially towards the bottom end of it. So there's going to be a lot of teams picking quarterbacks, which obviously you're in the market for now, and top offensive linemen. Every team needs those. So at least with this draft pick now, you have more options. Do you have to nail the pick? Of course you do. I mean, if you have the top 10 pick and then Tom Telesco goes out there and bungles it, I mean, you're going to feel no better about it. But you give yourself more of a chance to pick the guy that you think can help you the most by staying in the top 10. And it absolutely makes a difference, because you're just not going to have the options for some of these guys if you're not in the top 10. But of course, as always, you still have to execute and make the right pick and not just go along with who people think should be in the top 10. Get the guy that you need if he's there in the top 10. And so far, the Chargers' top 10 picks in recent history have been Joey Bosa and Mike Williams. And Joey Bosa has been 100% a success. Mike Williams, I think the jury is still out, but he's obviously playing very well right now. Either way, I mean, the Chargers helped their draft position this week, which obviously in a season that you're not going to make the playoffs is helpful. So I get it. If you die tomorrow, that's going to suck that you had to watch a 39-10 loss to the Vikings. But in the overall grand scheme of things, in the macro this is a good thing for the Chargers, and they really never should have won this game. And I said that last week, that those were my feelings on it as well. But not very many things to look for or to find positively in this game. So I'm stretching a little bit with the draft position, but that is going to wrap things up for today's show. Tomorrow is Wednesday, so that means it's crossover Wednesday. So we're going to be talking with your boy Q from the Locked On Raiders podcast to get into this game for two teams that have absolutely seen their seasons fall off a cliff. So I'm excited to hear what Q has to say about the Raiders' last game in the Coliseum this week, him blowing a game to the Jaguars that actually helped the Chargers as well in draft position. But until then, guys, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as calling into the voicemail line. If you guys haven't done it, your voice will always get on the show if it's about the Chargers, and the number is 323-524-7924. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from. You can find the Locked On Chargers podcast there as well. Thank you to all of our fans that have stuck with us this far when the Chargers have given you very little to root for. Your guys' appreciation means the world to us and keeps us going when this season is tough like this. So thank you, guys. We really appreciate you sticking with us even when the Chargers don't give you any reasons to. But we'll be back with you guys tomorrow. Until then, take it easy and go Bolts.